Hello, this is Julia Barbara, host of the Julia and Gino podcast. I'm here with the co-founder of Jake and Gino, my husband and co-host, Gino Barbara.
Hey, Julia.
Hey.
How are you doing?
Amazing.
I've got a great author today. I love the book. Great color, nice green book. The guest today is the founding pastor of Compass Bible Church, Dr. Mike Fabrez. In his latest book, Raising Men, Not Boys, Mike helps parents envision their son's future, navigate the teenage years, and prepare them to not only face the world, but contribute to it. Welcome to the show, Dr. Mike.
Hey, Gino and Julie, it's great to be on the program today.
This is an exciting, I know you're going to jump in, but this is an exciting topic for me because we have one son, you know, he's going to be 21 this year. And I just, wow, to watch him grow up and to be, go from, you know, infancy to little boy to man is just absolutely, for a mother, is just so beautiful. And I just want to encourage everyone, just take a minute and step back and just notice your boys because they grow into a man and it's incredibly beautiful. And a lot of times as moms, we want to hold on to that little kid. We want to hold on and take care and hover over them, but it's just a freedom to just let them go.
And I'll jump in here because Julia maybe didn't read the book because in the book, Mike says, we as parents are heading towards a separation of our kids. And you want to
I love the separation. Let's just hold on. That was just something cute to say.
Yeah, I love
the separation of watching them grow into adulthood.
You saw the backtrack.
Yeah.
You know, she backtracked a little bit. It's okay.
Come on. It's true
that what we're trying to do as parents, I think, Mike, Dr. Mike, before you jump in here, is we're trying to prepare our children to become adults, to leave the nest, to equip them with the tools and the skills to be able to make their own decisions. And I think Dr. Mike in the book goes through that about raising boys specifically. What made you want to write the book, Dr. Mike?
Well, you know, I wasn't really setting out to write this book, but I sent my two boys off to college. I got three kids, two boys and a daughter. And the dean of the school actually got a hold of me and said, you know, I've met your sons and I just, whatever you've done, is there any way you could put that in a book and get some of your principles of parenting down? Because we're not getting a lot of young men like this in our college. So, you know, I didn't know if he was just trying to flatter me and ask for a donation for the college or what, but, you know, I didn't, even that was a nice statement. And I thought, well, it's an idea. And I had a publisher, I published a handful of books and, he said, you got any ideas on your mind? And I said, nah, but then I thought, oh, you know what? I had someone challenge me about, writing a parenting book, particularly about raising, raising young men. And the publisher goes, oh, we need that. And so off we went. And I remember sitting down, my wife and I took a little, I think it was a anniversary trip down to San Diego. I live here in South Orange County, California, but we went down the coast and we sat in the restaurant of the hotel. And on a napkin, we just sketched out what were the principles that kind of governed our parenting that helped us, you know, raise our boys. And that became the table of contents. And then I went off to write it and it's done really well. I mean, it's been a book that a lot of people have picked up, I think because of the culture we're in. I mean, you say, you talk about Julie about looking at your boys and what a precious thing it is to raise a young man. It's not valued by our culture the way it ought to be. So I think there's a thirst for it, right? How do I raise a man? And I'm proud that I raised a young man and he's standing on his own and he's out there. He's not in the basement of my house at 30 playing video games. You know, that's a good thing. You've done a good thing. And I think we need to value that. And, you know, we're in a culture that though they're constantly saying we're misogynistic, there's a word that wasn't even in my spell check when I started the book, the word misandry. Misandry is the opposite of being misogynistic. And misandry is where we are as a culture, where we're really denigrating men and boys all the time. And you couldn't take a commercial, let's just say a commercial, where you got the dumb dad and the stupid boyfriend or the dumb guy on the commercial and the girl's got all the answers. She's the smart one, puts the man in his place. You couldn't flip that around in our culture, right? I mean, that'd be like, oh, you're bagging on women. Well, we're bagging on men all the time. And this is about pounding our chest or trying to make our kid this middle linebacker of the football team necessarily. But it is like, hey, there's something to being a boy and there's something to being a young man and there's something good about being a man. And those distinctions, we should celebrate them and we should understand that raising a young boy in our home that goes off to stand on his own two feet, and he's not just chasing porn and video games, that's a good thing. A productive citizen in our culture who cares for family members, who cares for the society, who takes leadership roles because he wants to serve. I mean, we need more of that, not less of it. And so we just wanted to bring out of the shadows the process of raising our boys and saying it's a good thing. And like you just said, Julia, we can be proud of raising our boys to be men.
Mike, when your donation-seeking friend came to you and said, I want more of this, what was this? Like, specifically, what did he say you had done a good job about raising your boys?
You know, that's a good question. And it was at dinner. They had invited me out to this dinner. It was just a simple restaurant. I didn't dig deep, like, hey, tell me more about why you like my boys. But I just think the gist of what I caught from what he was impressed with was they were responsible. They had a good work ethic. They cared about, doing whatever they did and doing it well. They weren't just the shrug your shoulders kind of, I don't care. It doesn't matter. The guys that just want to play all the time. And, I don't think my boys are necessarily exceptional. They've both grown up to be leaders, which is great. But I just think he was impressed by the fact that they weren't a lot of the detached kind of down and out basement dweller boys that I think we have a lot of people doing. They just want to play games all day.
Next big question, and then I'll let my wife jump in here because I got tons of questions here because this is a man's podcast, so I feel like testosterone here.
I'm outnumbered.
In the book, it's great because, you talk about God's design. What is God's design for grown men?
Yeah, well, I think we've got to remember the first chapter of Genesis, that we're made in God's image, which to me is the most important thing of all, that we know our Creator. We're made to know and love and serve the God who made us. So I think that's the most important piece of all, that whether you're a male or a female, that you seek the God who says, come and seek me while I may be found, right? If you seek after me, I'll let myself be found by you. And I just think we need to get back to caring about the spiritual interior of our boys and our girls. And that one goes across both, genders. But when it comes to boys in particular, as God places Adam in a garden, he says, take this raw material and make it useful, exercise dominion over it, right? And eventually out of the dirt, produce an iPhone, and produce a skyscraper, build an airplane. I mean, those are things that ultimately come from that commission to exercise dominion over creation, to be a good steward of it, knowing it's not yours, right? We're going to come and we're going to go and leave the world behind, the earth behind. I'm going to leave the world in a better place than when I came, at least in my little corner of it. So I want to teach boys to do that. And I think they have a particular role in caring for a family. I think that's the norm. And though I can celebrate singleness, and I appreciate when I find a young man in my church, for instance, that says, I'm just called like the Apostle Paul and Jesus to be single. Well, great, that's fine. But the general, normal course of most people's lives is they're romantically inclined. They find a wife, and in finding that wife, they have a special responsibility to care, to nurture, to provide, to protect, and then to have children. And that whole process of even fathers being commissioned by God in Scripture to take the role of being that dad that doesn't exasperate his kids, but really make sure that they're raised thinking right and making good decisions. Dads are coaches, right? Moms are designed by God in a great way to nurture and love. And I see the distinction. I don't care how much people are egalitarian in their views of gender, but a little boy falls down on his bike and scrapes his knee and it starts bleeding, right? Mom runs over, kisses the boo-boo. Oh, are you okay? Is she? And dad's like, hey, there's no bone sticking out. Get back on the bike. Let's go. And I think that distinction is super important. And unfortunately, in a culture where we downplay the role of men in general, right, men have to acquiesce to the side of just nurturing all the time. And I'm saying we nurture and care often by being a strong leader in our society, in the organizations we're a part of, in our homes and in our marriages. And so I think that was an important part of what God did in setting Adam in the garden and directing a lot of the oversight of what he was responsible for to him. And so there's a distinction there. And of course, I hope you understand that I'm coming from a position of the worth of male and female, 100% equal. We're made in the image of God, both male and female. He created them. absolutely 100% behind that. No one's better than the other. It's just that they're different. And with the differences comes some role responsibilities. And in those role responsibilities, I just think we need to prepare our boys to take on that special role of protection and provision and being someone who provides leadership in some very specific ways.
In the book, you talk about the modern challenge. I know marriage is under attack, but let's talk about the modern challenge right now that we have in society. And you touched a little bit upon it, but what else do you see as part of the modern challenge of raising young men?
Yeah, I just think today there is so much that is designed for females. And I just think there's we want to celebrate females for sure. But when our little boys have that energy, you know, we instantly say, well, you must have some attention deficit disorder. Well, every little boy has attention deficit, right? It isn't a disorder, right? It's the way they're made. They don't sit there and sit through the story time as well as my daughter, right? I've raised a daughter. I've raised two boys. I just know there's a difference there. I write a chapter in the book about sweating every day. And making sure your boys sweat every day. And I think the reality of a culture that wants to corral our boys and kind of make them this androgynous, placid kind of, you know, you don't raise your voice, you don't squirm around, you don't stand up. I mean, boys need breaks. They need to get out. They need to run around. They need to blow off the steam because, frankly, there's a chemical washing through their body at a greater degree than little girls. And we need to recognize that they need the outlet for that testosterone to run around and be little boys, climbing trees, adventurous. They're going to fight with sticks like they're swords. That's just part of the chemistry of how God made boys different than little girls. And I'm not saying there's not a spectrum of how people, you know, I got some boys that want to join the chess club and some that want to be on the wrestling team. I get that. And same with females. You got some that are going to be on the softball team and some that are going to, you know, want to, whatever they do, sit and read a book, be on the book team, on the book club or whatever. So I realize the spectrums and all this, but I'm just saying at the center of men and women, there's distinctions. And in our culture, it's getting harder and harder when there's this merging together of expectations of human beings, as opposed to, no, men are different than women and little boys are different than little girls. And not to mention, let me just get this big one, and we know this is going on. Today, everyone is saying you need to be self-actualized, self-realized. You need to do what you want. Whatever it is that you think you want to be or you want to do, you do it. It's about me, right? It's about self. It's about, as one book title put it, it's about the triumph of the modern self. And we put ourselves up on this pedestal. Well, Jesus came on the scene and said, you know, real manliness, real servanthood is greatness, rather, is servanthood, putting my life in a place where I'm trying to be helpful and I'm risking to be helpful and I'm striving to be helpful and I'm doing what I can in the world around me through what God has given me to do something that is really others oriented. A big part of the problem with the suicidal ideations of people, they're collapsing in on themselves. They look at their phones all day and they're trying to compare themselves to people online. Let's stop looking at ourselves in the mirror and let's start focusing on the fact that we've been designed and equipped and we have certain talents to go and make a difference in the world for good, to serve. And you get back to that dinner that I had with the dean, I feel like maybe that's what he saw, right? Is that my boys weren't just in it for themselves, that they had at least been trained to think, how can I serve the people around me? And that's critically important. That's a challenge in our day because everything's wired for you. And that's why we have 35-year-olds living in their parents' basement doing nothing but eating pizza and playing games so that they can you know, tickle their brains on whatever it is that they think makes them happy.
Yeah. So it's so true. Everything you said, I love what you said. And I think the people out there are just confused because they send their kids to school and it's kind of like a battle. It's a battle between, I know what I should do. I know how I am supposed to raise my kids, but they don't know how. I mean, it's a basic question, but we try to lecture to the kids. We say, here's what you're going to have respect for other people. Give us some idea of how you actually raise your especially your boys through your example, because that's ultimately how we're teaching our children.
Yeah. Well, I think first of all, dad's got to be involved in actually raising their kids, right? I mean, a dad has to sit down at the breakfast table and at the dinner table and actually have conversations that matter about what your day's going, what you're going to face in this day. And at the end of the day, what you did face in the day. I mean, I ended my days with my boys, not only at the table, but after we had some downtime as a family, the nights we were at home, sit down and read with my kids and sit down and pray with my kids before they go to sleep, tell stories with my kids. I mean, if you just hand them an iPad and say, well, dad's tired, he's been working all day, then dad's never really involved in the parenting of his kids anyway. Dads have to be engaged. And that's why I get back to the biblical responsibility being directed to men. Often things are directed to certain genders because they have a proclivity to not do that thing. And I think men, we think, hey, we're earning the paycheck. We're bringing home the bacon, perhaps. And my wife's the one that's supposed to teach them things that are important. And I think, yeah, of course my wife is. And my wife probably taught my kids a lot more than I ever taught them. But I had to be involved. And I had to get involved in teaching them. I wrote some things early on when my kids were probably 3 years old, my oldest. And I started writing, how can I impart to them the things that I think are important? I ended up writing a manual called Bible Survey for Kids. Because in my mind, the answers are ultimately found in the scriptures, right? And I'm thinking, okay, there's so much I want them to understand. Well, I've got to be able to teach them myself. So I created this kind of teacher's manual that I used as a guide to sit down every day with my kids and say, here's what the Bible has to say. Here's why the things in it have endured for millennia, because it's the foundational ingredients for being a human being. So I needed to sit down and teach them that. And how many dads even have a thought these days about actively engaging and teaching and training their kids? So I think dads have got to coach their kids and not just mom. And I just, the mom may have more hours with my kids than I'll ever have, than I ever had when they were in the home. But I need to purposefully say, I'm going to get involved. And I get involved by reading good books with them. I get involved by reading to them when they're young. I get involved by teaching them things. We used to draw pictures together of things that were important and then just discuss them. I mean, however you want to do it, you just got to do it. And you've got to be more actively engaged. And what do they see? You talk about an example. They see dad caring about things more than just sitting down and watching, you know, cat videos on YouTube, right? They start to realize, hey, dad cares about stuff. And I think most dads are very active. They show a lot of initiative at work, right? They're going after sales. They're being aggressive. They care. They strategize. But when they come home with their kids, if I ask, what's your strategy for raising your kids? How engaged are you, right? How much do you think about the threats like you do to your business? A lot of dads don't think about it. So I'm saying, hey, think about it. And the book in part is just you saying, as a dad and a mom, let's think about how to do this.
That is so good.
I'm writing questions down as things pop up, because there's so many, good. I want to go so many different directions. But Dr. Mike, we know that you're not perfect. What mistakes did you make raising your boys? And maybe you can share some of those learned lessons with the listeners.
Yeah, well, I do think there are times you look back and you say, I wish I wouldn't have responded with my emotions in all of this. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes we need to cool off before we start laying into a lecture on our kids or, you know, and I'm not at all saying I shouldn't discipline my kids or I shouldn't have some consequences for of course. And sometimes it's good to know that dad's really irritated with this. But, you know, there are times that you can respond emotionally to situations where you don't have all the facts. And when you look at how important it is, you know, in every other area of life for there to be fairness as you look at whatever situation, I just want to have more, you know, I want to have a more thoughtful and intellectually driven response to what's happening and not just this irritated me. So here's what I'm going to do. So I don't want to be as reactive. And there were times, of course, like most dads, we do react instead of thinking clearly. I think sometimes there was a greater interest in them doing well in school when I realized you can get an A on a test, but that doesn't matter as much as your character. At other things, it may have been how you acted on the baseball field on Friday night. And I'm more concerned about whether you did well in geometry. And so, you know, my kids, I think they knew, and that was at least coming out of my mouth. I think an A on earth, as my old pastor used to say, could be an F in heaven, you know, and an F on earth, though, it could be an A in heaven. And you have to really think through what's most important. And so there's a line my wife and I used a lot. What will matter, you know, 20 years from now for my kids? And will this matter? right? Will this recital matter, or that they broke this thing matter? You got to think about things with a bigger picture. And that's really where the book starts. It starts with thinking, imagine your kids years from now and start working toward that. And that's, like you said, Julia, you're sending them out into the next generation. Psalm 127 mm-hmm. talks about kids being arrows and we're shooting them out. And so I want to envision where are they going to be when they're 35? How are they going to respond to their wife when they're 35? How are they going to deal with their job when they're 35? So I just think that's a big part of it and how we consider it in our own thinking.
Mike, tell us about the relationship of husband and wife at home, mother and father at home. You know, I think a lot of times we think, and, you know, I've talked to a lot of women about this, you know, take the argument into the other room. Don't let the kids see you argue. There's a lot of, you know, a lot of ways people, you know, show their kids the relationship. Maybe people like argue in front of the kids. There's a lot of interesting ways that people do that. What is your take on that? How is it you and your wife? What was the relationship like in the home in front of the kids?
Yeah, well, I do think there is a desire of every sinful kid to want to divide and conquer. And so I wanted to make it really clear. Mom and I are a team on this. As a matter of fact, when you're long gone and you move out, Mom and I are still going to be here. This is the permanent relationship. And, you know, we're going to be on the same team. And so we worked at that. We tried to make sure that if we did have disagreements, we're going to close the door and discuss it behind closed doors because we're a team. And we didn't want to show that there was a chink in the armor in terms of our opinion about something because the kids always want to exploit that, right? They love to exploit that. So I do think they need to see the priority of mom and dad. And I tell you what, this is a very simple thing. Gino and Julia, think about this. It's a simple thing. It's so simple, but I just find if parents do it, it speaks volumes to the kids. And that is mom and dad being committed to date night, going mm-hmm. out on a date, starting from the earliest of years. And I remember my kids clutching to my pant leg, right? When we dropped them off with grandma or, you know, a friend at church and screaming. And I remember getting down on their level and going, you know what? This is what I want you to do with your wife, right? When you're a grown up, they didn't process all that, but I want you to prioritize the relationship of your marriage. And I'm going to do that with your mom. So you're just going to have to suck it up because mom and I are going out for some sanity and some, you know, some spaghetti, and we're going to have dinner and a walk on the beach and an ice cream. And then we'll see you in the morning. And I think that consistent prioritization of the marriage over the parenting is critical. Mm-hmm. And our natural tendency is to put everything aside in our marriage, right? Our sex life, our dating life, our time together, and focus mm-hmm. on the kids. That becomes a child-centered home, and kids mm-hmm. know that it's a child-centered home. And you've just set yourself up for chaos, I think, for the next 15, 16 years.
Definitely. I think we fell into that a little bit, where it was, you know, I learned kids come first. And unfortunately, I mean, it was like 15 years of that. And so that was one thing that I have. That was one probably one of my bigger regrets. But at the same time, it taught me a lot. So my kids are okay. We talk about it all the time, but it's all good.
Why are you looking at me when you're saying
that? Well, because I was curious.
She's blaming me.
It was completely on me. He cooked spaghetti at the restaurant. He had in a restaurant for years. So I didn't want, that was the last thing I wanted. But yeah.
Arguing in front of the guests. See,
yes,
I will divide and conquer at this point.
but it is interesting because I know divorce rate is so high. Yeah. And my husband's Italian, so he uses his hands. My kids used to think we fought all the time and argued, but we were just talking. And lately though, the kids now are actually worried when we fight, which they never were before. And I think the divorce rate has gone up so high, and I never really thought about that. But my kids now are worried that every time we disagree, there's going to be an issue. And so that kind of makes me sad a little bit because, wow, what a stress that I didn't even realize that the kids had in society in general, because I mean, people are getting divorced over the littlest of things nowadays. So there's no respect for marriage.
That fosters security. And I don't think a kid's going to thrive without feeling some sense of security.
Yes.
And you can say all you want. And again, I understand there are situations you can't avoid and there are divorces that happen. But I often say a bad or difficult marriage is better than a good divorce. And because mm-hmm. when I sit down and I tell my 5-year-old, listen, mom and I don't love each other anymore, but I'll always love you. That's a hard argument to pitch to a kid who will instantly not believe that as dad packs up his bags and heads to the hotel and finds another house. You have to be able to show them you are secure in this home because mom and dad are committed to one another. And as that's like you said, Gino, we're heading toward a divorce with our children. And I want them to know you're gonna move out and you're gonna start your own family. And I hope you'll come visit and I hope you'll take a call once a week from us. But mom and I are in this till death do us part. And I think that does provide security and a context for our children to start to thrive. Because you're right, we don't want them feeling insecure that mom and dad aren't a firm foundation.
Jake and Gino's Multifamily Mastery 6 is coming to the Gaylord Palms in Orlando, Florida this October 14th and 15th. Join Jake and Gino as they welcome special guests like Chris Voss, Luke Wren, David Green, and many more. Discover Jake and Gino's three-step framework for real estate success, enabling students to accumulate $4 billion in assets. MM6 is the multifamily event of 2023 that you do not want to miss. Go to jakeandgino.com/MM6 to reserve your tickets today.
Yeah.
Mike, this is more of an opinion question, but why do you think, and I can give you my opinion after you've shared yours, why do you think that society is heading this way by confusing children, by trying to break up marriages, by making kids think of their sexuality at such a young age? What do you think is behind all this? What do you think they're trying to achieve by confusing us?
Yeah. And you know, I like to say I'm not a conspiratorialist, but there is a spiritual conspiracy. Mm-hmm. And I think it links up somewhere in a spiritual realm that this is what Jesus kept telling us Satan is out to do. He's out to quote John 10, to steal and kill and destroy. Mm-hmm. And there's no better way to do that than to dismantle our families or get kids to believe that our sexual organs are just there to be entertainment for us. We just turn all the attention on our ourselves. And if we can put ourselves at the center of our little universe, then we have all these colliding little universes and we create chaos. Satan, I believe, he's the author of chaos, right? God is a God of order. And to be in an ordered society or even an ordered home, that means you can't always get what you want. I mean, I don't know anybody who gets married and gets everything they want, right? Because you got another human being that you're sleeping next to, and they got wants, and they don't always harmonize with your wants. So I have to teach my children, and I have to pray for our society that we'll start to see the greater good. It's like money, right? I have to save now and sacrifice now so I can get something I might want later. It's a deferred fulfillment. And today, I think Satan, this is the conspiracy in every area, saying, you don't have to wait. You get whatever you want. Do get your fulfillment now and don't worry about the bills that'll come in down the road. And I do think that's the problem. And you can connect dots everywhere with all that's going on in society of people becoming more self-centered, more self-focused, more self-aggrandizing, more prideful, more into themselves. And real love is not that way, right? Love is not self-seeking.
Yeah.
I am not a conspiratorial person also, but
so funny that the both of you said that, but then spoke truth.
I think it's so clear nowadays that they're just trying to confuse people because they want weak men, because weak men are easily controlled. And you'll have the evil men who are strong, like the Putins of the world and like whoever's running our government now, they're take over. And when you have a weak person, and I don't mean just strength as in someone, I'm talking about weak strength of character, strength of conviction, strength of integrity. If you don't have any of the strengths and you have weaknesses, you can easily control that person. We've seen that happen over COVID over the last 3 years. And I think that's what they've been trying to do, and you've seen the effects. And there's very little pushback. There's very little conviction, and everyone's going with the flow when instead we should be saying, hey, time out. That doesn't sound like a good idea. I mean, and 3 years later, you're like, they lied on that again, and they lie, and there's another one, and there's another one, and it keeps going down. So to me, you're a little bit kinder than I am. I just seen it as I get older. It just seems very, 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 very simple. Strong men make good times. Good times make weak men. Weak men make tough times, and tough times make strong men. And that's been the circle, ever since. And that's what's going to happen again now. These tough times are going to make some really strong men, and we need strong men. And if there aren't strong people leading us, we're going to be in a world of hurt. What say you, Joel?
Yeah. Well, like Mike said, it comes from somewhere, and I know it's a spiritual attack. And so, yes, I 100% agree, but it starts from something, and it's not men.
I'm sorry. I'm the simple guy.
No, but I can tell you, you've said it so well. Yeah. You know, the idea of the weakness of this herd mentality and everyone being unquestioning about a few people that have strong opinions and tell you not to dissent. If mm-hmm. we don't raise people to think for themselves, right, to have the courage to disagree. Today, you can't even debate ideas. Go on a university campus. I'm not far from University of California, Irvine. If I go on the campus today and I say, I don't agree with the modern view of X, Y, or Z, we don't have arguments, right? Mm-hmm. All we have, and I mean that in the best sense, we don't get to reason together and try and persuade one another. I get shouted down. You're going to yell at me. You're going to call me names, right? In logic class, we call that ad hominem arguments, where they attack you and not the argument. So you're right. Where are we going to have people that are going to think and clearly question and then say, you can't shut me down and censor me, right? This country was founded. Think about our country, which thankfully was a little respite of the grace of God, where people said things like, yeah, the printing press is a very powerful tool. And anyone can put any idea, can be an idiot and say stupid things in a booklet. And it looks very professional because it's been typeset. But you know what? We want the freedom for you to do that. You say what you want. We'll let the arguments go out there, and we will let you figure out what's true. We don't need to say, well, we need new rules because there's an internet. We need new rules because, you know, people can put up podcasts and blogs. The principle was in our founding documents, which I think was super important, that we're not going to censor what people say. We're not going to think about the misinformation vocabulary of the last 3 years, right? Like, what does that mean? Like, all of a sudden now, because I'm saying something you don't agree with, you can shut me down? Insanity. That's insanity. Mm-hmm. We had the test case back in the early days when they were wearing knickers and wigs. They were saying the printing press could be a dangerous tool, but we know we can't have a society that doesn't degenerate into a dictatorship unless we have the free exchange of ideas and have people that are willing to stand up and debate these things. You can't debate today on a college or university mm-hmm. campus. You just can't. You'll get yelled mm-hmm. down by the blue-haired people that'll tell you you're a bigot. And that's just got to end by the fact that we've got, I think, men and women who are going to be raised in good families to say, we're not going to live by those rules.
Mm. I think one of the things that, in our house anyway, and this is, it's hard as the parent, but we have to teach the kids that, you know, you go to school, if you ask a question, you literally get in trouble, you get sent to the principal for questioning anything. And I think we have to remember is that let the kids not talk back, but question what we're asking them to do. And I think that's been helpful for the kids to be able to get that courage to stand up for what's right.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Dr. Mike, what's in your future? What are you looking forward to doing in your future?
Well, I have another question. It's okay.
Well, yeah, the next book I got coming out, by the way, is an interesting one. I just finished it, doing some final edits. The publisher's about to put it out. It's on envy. And what's interesting about envy, and I kind of work backwards in this, I saw so much envy that was driving the societal chaos that we have. And all the talk when we went from equality to equity, I thought, okay, the big problem is here, this kind of, you can't have a bigger slice of cake than I have. And I thought, what is that? That's societal envy. And then I started opening my Bible to say, well, that's everywhere, all the way down to the first murder in scripture. Cain murders Abel because he's envious that he has something, in that case, the favor of God, that he doesn't have. So when I started tracing it, I saw it everywhere in the Bible. Not only do I see it in people's conflicts in the home and in the church and in society and the workplace, but I see it everywhere in the Bible, even to the place where Pilate could look at the Pharisees and say, I know they've delivered Jesus over to be crucified because they were envious. So envy's a big problem. If you look back at the early church for the first, I don't know, 400 or 500 years, they talked a lot about envy. But when was the last time you read a book about the problem of envy? So I wrote a book called Envy, one word title, subtitle is A Big Problem You Didn't Know You Had. And so that's in my future. I've been thinking a lot about that. And maybe I can come back on the show one day and talk about that book. It should be out in November. But I do think we've got internal conflicts in our hearts that end up coming out in our mouths, in our relationships, and then in society at large that we're not addressing. The early church talked about the seven deadly sins. Well, envy was one of the seven deadly sins. And I don't want to be known for writing a series of seven books, but I think this one needed to be written first because I don't have many people saying, you know, Pastor Mike, I'm really struggling with the sin of envy. No one confesses that to me. And that shows me Satan's good at flying this one under the radar. Solomon once said, it's amazing how much work is done among men purely out of envy. A quote from Ecclesiastes. So I think we need to talk about it. It drives sometimes the businessman. It'll drive the woman picking out clothes. It'll drive the kid on the little league team. And we've got to say, wait a minute, there's something better than envy. And it's called contentment and being responsible as a human being and being fine at the end of the day that I've done my work. As is put in Ecclesiastes 5, that I'm found joy in the work that God's called me to do. And that's not the way that's, you know, the guy's selling more books than me or doing leading a bigger church than me. So that's what's on my mind and that's what's in my future.
That's an excellent book. That is amazing. Definitely. We're definitely going to have you on. But before we let you go, I do want to ask you a question because we talk about family life. We talk about, you know, being the parents of the home. Let's just really quick talk about the importance of community. Stepping outside of the home because we could teach our kids everything inside, but now we've all stepped out of, into the world and who we're hanging out with, who our kids are hanging out with, who our friends are as parents, who we're letting into our home. Talk about that for a minute, about the importance of community.
Huge. I mean, here's the Apostle Paul talking to adults in Corinth, which was a very rich, economically prosperous city. He said, do not be deceived. Bad company corrupts good morals. So it really, I mean, that sounds like something you'd hear in a youth group, but he's talking to civic leaders and businessmen and women of a high standing. And he's saying it's all often comes down to who you're hanging out with, who your community is, what's your circle beyond your family. And so I think we can train our kids to do a lot of right things in our home. We can get them to think rightly. But as soon as they find two or three of their best buddies that say, oh, that's ridiculous, your parents are squares, all that gets flushed down the toilet pretty quickly. So I think what we need is to be very, very I try to raise my kids without a ton of rules, but one of the rules we had is you got to be careful about who you're hanging out with. And I got the right to veto your friendships. And at some point, occasionally, you have to do that, at least subtly say, you know, I don't think Johnny's the guy we want over for the movie night on Saturday. I think we pick, you know, one of your other friends, because friendships and community and who you're hanging with, super important. It shapes your whole moral direction in life.
Dr. Mike, where can the listeners get a hold of you?
PastorMike.com, believe it or not, is the easiest way to get me. And that takes you to, I'm on the radio, I'm close to 1,000 stations across the country. We do a 30-minute program where I just teach the Bible. And so if you go to PastorMike.com, it takes you to the place where all of that material is available for free. And people can just download it or stream it. They can find out where the broadcasts are in their area in the country. And it also take it all the other stuff I'm doing. I'm the president of a Bible college out here in Southern California, run a church. We have a church planning association. So it'll eventually get you to all that other stuff. But a lot of people are trying to find out what I think on this issue or that, or what I think about the Bible. PastorMike.com is the launching point for all of that.
We want to thank you for being on the show. I mean, Raising Men, Not Boys is an amazing book. I think you should go out there. If you're a dad struggling to raise your children, and even if you're not struggling, you just want to get a couple of tips on how to become a better father, I would listen to the podcast again, and I would go out and buy the book. We want to thank you for being on. And my wife always teases me for ending the show like this, but I'm going to end the show like this because it's my show. I'm Gino. She's Julia. And we're Julia and Gino. Thanks, Dr. Mike.
Thank you.